I'm just going to work a little bit out with you tonight. Won't keep you, but just no more than 3 or 4 hours. But I got something inside me that I'm hoping that we can work out together. Over the last several weeks, we've been talking about really one concept, one idea that God has helped to reveal in a few different ways, but we've been talking about the idea of who He is, who Christ is in our lives, who God is to us, who He is, and how we fit into His plan. The problem is we're trying to fit Him into our plan. I mean, it's true. How can I fit church into my schedule? How can I fit your plans into my schedule? When He said, I gave you all that time, why are you trying to fit me in? It's my breath in your lungs. But you trying to fit me in? I love God. He's got to have a sense of humor because he hasn't put me under yet. Oh, Miss Frieda, you know what I'm talking about. I'm thankful. Same way with Jennifer. Today is her 29th birthday. I don't think she'll be mad at me for telling her age. And I'm so lucky to be able to spend this time with her. I wanted to put something on social media today just to be silly. It would go something like this: I met someone. No, I thought it out. I mean, I had it planned in my head that what I was going to say. I didn't even tell her yet. I was going to put on my social media page, I found someone. And I wasn't even looking for him. We didn't get along at first. In fact, even though I was nice, she wasn't. But luckily, 20 years later, I get to be here to celebrate the birthday with her, still celebrating birthdays with her. So I found somebody. I just was lucky enough that she decided it was okay to stick with me. So thank you and happy birthday. I want to read something that goes along with what Pastor ministered on Sunday. At least I think it does. He might disagree. And again, he'll set the record straight, so I'm not worried. But from Esther chapter 4, I want to look at just a few verses of Scripture because we know this story, but I just want to point some things out to you. And it goes along with Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 and 28. You don't have to turn there. Again, we read that on Sunday morning where says, so God created man in His own image. In the image of God created him, male and female created He them. And God blessed them. And God said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. Have dominion. Esther chapter 4, verse number 10 says, I'm going to read, if you don't mind, from the New Living Translation, just because I think it's a little bit clearer to me personally. Then Esther told Hathach to go back and relay his message to Mordecai. The whole world knows that anyone who appears before the king in his inner court without being invited is doomed to die unless the king holds out his gold scepter. And the king has not called for me to come to him in more than a month. So Hathach gave Esther's message to Mordecai. Mordecai sent back his reply. Don't think for a moment that you will escape there in the palace when all the other Jews are killed. If you keep quiet at a time like this, deliverance for the Jews will arise from some other place, but you and your relatives will die. What's more, who can say but that you have not been elevated, exalted, lifted up to the palace for just such a time as this? I want to weave this into the narrative that we've been building for the last month. If you don't mind, I'm going to quickly and very, very quickly revisit just a couple of the things that we've talked about. We talked 3 or 4 weeks ago about the concept of limited good, that there is only so much honor, glory, praise in the world. And when John the Baptist, it's not necessarily a true concept, but it was the concept that John the Baptist was operating under when he said that he must increase and I must decrease. John the Baptist was when he said those words, he was operating under the idea, the concept, the belief system that his self-importance could not remain at this level and the Messiah enter into the world at the same time, but rather for the Messiah to triumph, for the Messiah to be able to be who the Messiah was supposed to be, John the Baptist believed that he must actually decrease in importance. Because he believed, as did so many in those civilizations, he believed that there was a limited amount of good, honor, there was a limited amount of glory that could be received by people or individuals, and that if the Messiah was going to receive or achieve his true place, that we had to humble ourselves to allow him to rise to his greatness. And I combated that with our mentality. Yeah, we want God to rise, but we want to rise too. We don't want to humble ourselves. We don't want to take a knee. We don't want to, and it's not because that's the Christ nature in us, it's because that's the human nature in us that desires the applause of man, that desires the honor of man, that wants to have good words. I mean, who doesn't want to have nice things said about them? So the idea was that we have to decrease when he increases. And so as he increases, I decrease. Not that I am losing anything, but instead I find my worth in who he is. Okay? So it's a different mindset. It's the mindset of the kingdom. Not that I am giving up my rights to my throne, but I am giving up my rights to be right in order that I might assume his robe of righteousness, because I can't be right and righteous. I have to pick. I heard that from this man. You try and use that when you're fighting with your spouse next time. Honey, I'm not just right, I'm righteous. No, it doesn't fly. It doesn't work. Doesn't work. No, it doesn't work. Because by my decision that I have to be right, I actually lose all ability to be righteous because of my pride. I forfeit the match. Game, set, match. It's over. It's over. So we talked about that. We talked about that he must increase, I must decrease. The second thing, the next thing that we had talked about was the idea that I must deny myself, take up my cross, and follow him. That was one of the things that we discussed, that I must actually turn away from the things that I want. Again, it's the same concept. And instead, crucify myself through the cross, carry the cross. Remember, the concept of the cross is not a beautiful thing, not a kind thing, but instead it's the idea or the concept of I'm giving up everything that matters to me in order to achieve and to receive who Jesus Christ is. The idea of the rich young ruler. Okay, so that's what we talked about there. So tonight, to wrap up things, we just want to talk about, for such a time as this. So, you've heard me, again, the last several weeks, talking about humanistic ideology, talking about the mentality that I am almost God's representative on the earth. And so because of that, I'm able to do certain things. And the problem with that mentality, while there is truth in it, if we're not careful, we actually separate the real power of Christ from it, because we begin to take on and take ownership of the power of the cross. And we begin to believe that it is because of my personality and my character traits, because I'm a good arguer, I'm a good communicator, I'm a good people person, I'm really great at being able to accomplish tasks. So for that reason, I take ownership of the gospel, when instead I don't really have any ownership of the gospel, but instead I am his. And without him, I can do nothing. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's our focus. Where is our focus? If our focus is inward all the time on ourselves, then our focus is constantly looking at how great we are, how great the things that we can do are, when in reality, everything we must do must always point back to the one who gave it all for us. Everything that we must do, our focus, our lives must always lead back to him, the Lord Jesus Christ. And if we're not careful, we actually begin to believe our own PR. You understand what I mean when I say that? We begin to believe I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. But instead of focusing and emphasizing the concept of I can do all things through Christ, we emphasize I can do all things through Christ. So where is our emphasis? Where is the emphasis that we have given to our lives? Is it inward or is it upward? Is it on us and ourselves and what we're accomplishing? Or is it on the healer, the King of Kings? Is it on him? Where are we putting our focus? Where, if we're not going back to the source on a regular basis, if we're not touching Him, if we're not crying out to Him with the understanding that I could do nothing without Him, that I have no ability without Him, if we can't come to the humility and the understanding that without the intimate relationship of Jesus Christ, without prayer, without fasting, without an understanding that He must continue to increase, without that knowledge, without that deep-seated understanding, because at the end of the day, don't we really understand that we can do a lot of stuff ourselves? Yes. And so that becomes even more difficult to deal with. The idea of who am I in relationship to Him? Does that mean I have to get on my knees and grovel? He does say work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. But as we're reading here, this is where I want to come to the concept, the idea that I want to land on tonight is that Christ in you, the hope of glory, okay? Christ in you, the hope of glory. We got that, right? We're together with that. We understand that He's in us and that He's our hope. So as we look at Esther, and we see this played out, you'll notice that there were some places that Esther was brought. First of all, everybody should know, if you don't know the story, let's hit a little bit of the background. But Esther was a Jew, and Esther was taken into the court of the king because he found himself to be displeased with his wife. He was no longer happy with her, because basically she wouldn't do what he wanted. And he had the power and the authority to put her out. And so he did. And so he decided to find the fairest, most beautiful woman in the land. And a man named Mordecai knew of this beautiful young lady named Esther. And he called to her and he said, come, I want you to enter into this beauty contest. And when she came and the king saw her, something in her, something about her changed him. Something about her gripped him. Something about her touched him. And you can think of it in any way you want. It really doesn't matter. What I want you to focus on, what I want you to understand is that when the favor of God is upon us, the favor of God is not our abilities, not our gifts, not our knowing, not our callings, but instead the favor of God is this little special thing that He puts on us that says it doesn't matter where you are, who you are, how you got there. I'm going to cause people to see what I want them to see in you. I'm going to cause them to see what they need to see so that their lives can be changed just like I'm going to change your life. The favor of God is something that elevates us just from normal furniture in a room. Do you understand what I'm talking about? It elevates us just from normal trappings in a room to become the queen. It just from normal beautiful young lady to someone that catches his eye. That has to be nothing other than the favor of God. And if we're not careful, we will take the favor of God and we will look at it and expect it. When in reality, we need to treat it with great honor and say, God, I don't know what I ever did to deserve what you have done for me. But there's one thing I know. I could never have gotten to where I am, how I am without you. There is none other but you. But there comes a point, if we're not careful, where we actually begin to think we deserve what people are giving us, when in reality, it's His favor. It's His favor that He pours out on us. So here she is in this beauty contest, end all beauty contest, where the prize is even greater than anything she could believe. She's set up for life. And she comes to live as the queen. But again, she was a woman, and in this culture, she had very little say, except what favor God gave her with him. And so this shows that in the preceding chapters, a man named Haman had come into the king's court, and something happened between him and the king. They really hit it off. Something clicked between the two of them. And so Haman was promoted around all these other people and became the king's confidant almost overnight. And Haman takes issue with Mordecai because he sees Mordecai as garbage, as worthless, as somebody that needs to be disposed of. And so he takes it upon himself to, as he ingratiates himself with the king, as he works his way in there, as he gets his tentacles wrapped around the king, he decides that he's going to use all of his influence, all of his power. It even says that he offered the king 10,000 talents of silver, which according to the translation I was reading would be about 340 tons of silver. That's a lot. To get the king to do one thing in particular, and that is kill Mordecai. But instead of just killing Mordecai, he says, I want you to do a little bit better than that. I want you to kill Mordecai. I want you to kill Mordecai's brothers, his sisters, his aunts, his uncles, his cousins. I want them all gone. Why don't you just build a wall at the... No, wait a minute, that's a different story. But I want you to get... That was a joke. I want you to get rid of them all. Y'all catch up later. It was a joke, but y'all catch later. All right. He said, I want you to get rid of them all. And so I'm going to give you 10,000 talents of silver so that you'll kill every Jew that's around. I want them all gone. Well, there's something that the king doesn't know. There's something that the king doesn't understand. And that is that the winner of his beauty contest, the winner that he has made his queen, is a Jew. And now she's scared to death. She doesn't want to bring that knowledge up. She doesn't want to talk about it. She's not sure what's going on. And so Mordecai is absolutely beside himself. There's still many months until this is supposed to happen. It's almost a year away, but Mordecai is already beginning to grieve for the future and beginning to grieve for what's going on. And so he says, I can't find any other place except to come to you. There's something about you. You hold the key. I don't think anybody else holds the key the way you do. She says, but you don't understand. I don't have anything to offer. The king hasn't even called for me in over a month. If I go to him and he doesn't want to see me, I could die. You don't understand. This is my life on the line. And he says to her these words, and this is what I want to talk about tonight. He says to her, perhaps, maybe it could be, is it possible that you are where you are for such a time as this? The reason why this weighs so heavily upon me is because I look around, and as I spoke to class after class of 10th graders today, and yesterday, the last 2 days, the thing that's been resounding within me, the idea that has been continually in my head is, you're in the room for a reason. When we went in March to Toledo and we went for a conference for the leadership of the churches, Bishop Pitts made a comment that we had not really given a lot of thought to. And I won't go into the long of the reason, but I don't know about you, but I feel different. Okay? I don't have the slick gifts that some of the others have. I don't feel that way. I am who I am. My mantra that I live with is, if that woman up there whose birthday is today does not mourn me when I die and is not sad that I'm gone, I have missed everything. I have lost. There is no reason for me to have lived. Because she knows me better than you do. It's easy for me to come and say, oh, Regina, God bless you. It's so nice to see you today. Oh, it's so... That's easy. Because then I walk away. That's easy. But when you live with somebody day after day, when you spend time with somebody and you're so close to that person, and they know you inside and out, and they still love you? Wow! Either they're sick too, or there's something good that's going on. So I don't even get excited about that kind of stuff, but there's something, I always feel out of place. I'll just be honest with you. I felt that way when I worked in my secular job, when I worked for the federal government. I hated those mixers. I hated spending time where we were supposed to socialize. I couldn't stand it. It was so difficult for me. It drove me nuts. I'd rather just be alone or be with one person I knew than have to do that. I could do it, but I don't like to do it. It's just not who I am. And so being there was difficult, but when he began to speak to us and he began to impart to us, he began to say something that changed my thinking and helped me to understand something. He said, what you don't get is that you don't have to vie for position. You don't have to look for position. You don't have to ask for anything. You are who you are by nature of the fact that you are in the room. Huh? I don't understand. Hang on. Your call and your designation has already been set because you have been invited. You received the invitation. You are here in the room. And that changed something in my thinking. It changed something in my mind because I thought that I had to attain a certain level. I thought I had to come to do this and do that. You understand what I'm talking about? When in reality, all God is saying, be who I called you to be, where I called you to be, because that's where my favor is. But if we're not careful, we're too busy being unhappy about our circumstance or being unhappy about where we are. When in reality, he says, be everything, to steal the theme from the army, be all that you can be where you are, in that place. And in this moment, when Mordecai comes to her, she says, I don't want to do that. I'll do anything else you want. Just ask. I'll do it. He says, no, you are where you are for a reason, for this time. And so I began to think about some things. And I there's a person I went to high school with, and he is very adamant about the fact that he and his wife refused to have children. refused to have any children. And when asked why, he is very vocal about it. I refuse to bring children into this God-forsaken world. And when reality, I began to think about that and began to understand and kind of see some of his points, because what kind of things do we have to offer to our children sometimes except for fear, except for failure, except for issues that we're dealing with? And come on, this last week has really been something else, because it hits closer to home, closer and closer and closer. And so we have to deal with that. We have to ask ourselves why. We have to ask ourselves, what do we have to do with it? What can we do to change it? What has he called us to do? And so I began to think about that. And then something hit me. You can call it a midnight pizza feeling. Had too much carbonation in my soda. Whatever you want to say, but something hit me. Something came up inside me, and something rose up and kind of knocked on the back of my head and said, come on, dummy, wake up. And you know what that thing was? That thing that knocked said, if you were not supposed to do something, do you really believe that God would have brought you to where he brought you in this time? And so what I want to declare to you tonight is, if you are breathing, some of you may not be, check your neighbor. But if you are breathing, if you are physically present, if you receive the invitation to come into this room, then I want to tell you something. There's something powerful for you in this room, because not everybody got that invitation. Not everybody received it. And more than that, not everybody responded, but you did. And so because you did, I want you to understand that you have everything that you need. It is at your fingertips. It is at your ready, because God has endued you with the power from on high to be able to handle whatever the enemy has to throw at you. If you could not handle it, you would not have been born in this time. If you could not handle it, if you were not equipped to deal with the things that you're going to face, you would not have been born in the situation you were born. If you were not able, if you didn't have the guts, if you didn't have the stamina, if you didn't have the courage, if you didn't have the bravery, oh man, you don't understand. Do you understand? Do you hear me? If you didn't have it, if you didn't have what it takes, this would not have been your time. But guess what? You're hearing me. You're under the sound of my voice. You're in the room. You received the invitation. You received the pull of the Spirit that said, this is where I'm supposed to be. So for that reason, that I have to believe, for no other purpose except for your purpose, you have been appointed to this time. Ooh. But you have to believe that. And I'm telling you, if you will but believe that, if you will step into those shoes, if you will pull on those pants, if you will button up that shirt and say, God, I know that you are able, even though I can't do it, I don't have the answers. I don't understand why the things are going on the way they're going on. I don't even know what to say. He says, shut your mouth when you get in front of them and open it. Open your mouth. Just let me speak through you. That's what he said. Let me speak through you, and I'll do it. You don't talk. Let me do the talking. Oh, man. Some of us don't know how to do that because we're too quick to talk. We're too quick to open our mouths. We're too quick to... Blah, 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 blah. Well, it's okay. We can work on it. But such a time as this. Such a time as this. Such a time as this. I'm telling you, there's an urgency in me that if we will change the frame of our mind, if we will change our perspective, Instead of the perspective of, oh, poor me, sad me, how horrible our life. See, I was raised in that depression. Not the Great Depression. It was a Great Depression, but it wasn't. You understand what I'm talking about. I was raised in this house where everything was, oh, the world is coming to the end. And oh, it's such a horrible place. And I'm not trying to beat up on that. I'm not trying to make light of that either. But do you understand that there is a generation or two that gave up their right to vote because they said there's no hope through politics? There's no hope through that avenue. Well, I want to thank you, Grandma, if you're listening to me, because I blame you for what we have to vote for this year. Not just you in particular, but your whole bunch of friends that said we're not even going to be part of the political system. And they didn't even register to vote. They wouldn't even pay attention because they said, my world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. Well, great. But what you miss out on understanding is that while you don't think this world is your home, he still said, I'll give you wherever your foot treads. Did he not say that to Abraham? He said, go on, son, and walk. Go on, take a walk, and wherever you put your foot, I'm going to let you own it. And so he looks at us today and he said, what do you want to own? If only you'll get up and start walking. If only you'll get up and start taking dominion. If only you'll get up and start saying, this is mine. Not because I deserve it, but because I'm here. And because I'm fulfilling the mandate of God. Do you hear me? Because I'm in the room. Because I'm here for such a time as this. But we've got our minds framed on something else. I've got to go, I've got to go, I've got to go, I've got to go. Okay, go! But do you mind if we stay here for a little while? Because I think he's making us. I would love to, God, even so, come quickly. But if you don't, tell me what to do. I told you, son, take dominion. Oh, I guess you did, didn't you? You're in the room. You're in the room for such a time as this. But we have our minds set on something else. We have our minds set that we are just travelers. We have our minds set that we cannot, that we don't want to become embroiled in this world. But in reality, that isn't that why our world has gone to where it has gone. Because we have checked out. Because we left. I'm not talking about getting some kind of military force together. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is take your place. Nehemiah said, is there not a man who will stand in his place on the wall? Ooh. I really need some folks to do certain things, but you know what we need today? We need some people who will stand in their place on the wall. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Because it's necessary for such a time as this. So he looked at her and he said, if you keep quiet, I'm just telling you. I don't know if there was any guilt involved. He might have been a Pentecostal. You know. Oh, please, act like you don't use guilt. You know what I'm talking about. Well, he says, well, you can be quiet if you want to. But just so you know, there won't be any, the deliverance for the Jews might rise up from somewhere else, because if you won't, God will find somebody who will. That'll preach. That's wonderful. And I don't want to deny anybody their blessing. But if he has to raise somebody else up, that means I decided to say no. He said, so I'm sure God will find somebody else, but just so you know, if he raises somebody else up, you and your relatives will die. After all, who's to say that you haven't been elevated for such a time as this? So she listens to him. She hears him. She feels what he's saying. She understands what he's getting at. It seeps down inside of her. Something changed. She reframed her point of view. Do you understand what I'm saying? What would your world look like if you changed your point of view to say that your assignment is where you are and that there's something for you to do today? Oh my goodness. Do you understand what I'm saying? My dad cracks me up. I will tell you, and I know he cracks some of you up too, but my dad cracks me up. Do you know? I can see it. Whenever we go someplace to eat, whenever we go someplace to go shopping, whenever we go out in public. No lie. I see the hamster running on the wheel inside of his head. I see it going. It's just going like this, going like this, going like this. And I watch him. He's looking at people. He's looking around. And at my ripe old age of 44, I know what he's thinking. God, show me. Who can I tell about you? God, lead me to the right person. Lead me to somebody whose soul is ready. Lead me to somebody who's ready to hear something about your goodness. Who's ready to hear something about your greatness. Who's ready to hear about how you did something for me. And because you did it for me, I know that he's able to do it for you too. And so he goes and he begins to look around and he asks for the leading of the Holy Spirit in every place that he's at so that he can at least witness to 300, 400, 500 before he goes home. You think I'm kidding? Am I kidding? Oh, go on, Brother Harold. Tell them it's a truth. And he will witness and he will tell them about Jesus. And if they don't know, they have soon made a beeline to get away from him if they don't want to hear about it. Or their hearts are open. And I will go back into those restaurants where he's been down here. And I've gone in with him and they don't say, oh yeah, aren't you, don't you go corner stone? No. They say, aren't you that guy's son? You think I'm joking. I have waitresses in the area. When I walk in, they say, oh, you're Walt's boy. How are you doing today? They don't say, oh, there's Pastor Matt. Look at that. Pastor Matt's come to see. No, they don't even know who I am. They don't care. They know I'm Walt's son. And you know what? I'm good with that. I'm okay with that because he has touched their life. He has made a difference because he said that wherever my feet go, I'm going to be who God called me to be because this is my assignment. And my assignment doesn't stop just because I get tired or just because I get scared or just because I don't feel like it today. My assignment remains my assignment no matter what. My assignment is to be where I am. For such a time as this. So we're looking, and there she is. She decides to go ahead and do what she said she would do. And if you haven't read it or it's been a while, it just overwhelms me every time I read it again to see that Haman's pride comes up and Haman decides he's going to do a certain thing and it always backfires. What ends up happening is that the king sees the one that has been given the favor. The king sees the one that has his eye, the one that is in the room by the invitation of the scepter. And he asks her and says, name it, whatever you want is yours. And she said, well, there's somebody who wants to do harm to me and everyone that I care about. And again, as soon as he finds out, it's all over. Story. I believe it's a true story. I believe it has some impact for me. I hope it has some impact for you. But more than that, it's a reminder about what Pastor talked about on Sunday morning. God created the heavens and the earth. He created man and woman. He created them in His image. And then He said, let them have dominion. Let them take dominion. Let them, in My image, through My calling, be where I have placed them, and let them do what I called them to do. The thing I want to leave you with tonight is, once again, if you're here, September 28th, 2016, it's because you have a September 28, 2016 anointing. It's because you have everything that you need through the power of His Spirit, not of your own self, lest any man should boast, but through the power of Christ. The things we've been talking about over all these weeks, it's all about Jesus. Jesus be the center of it all. But through the power of Christ, through Jesus, you, His emissary on the earth, His living epistle, have the ability to do what He called you to do. And even though the task looks too daunting, even though it looks like it's too hard, even though you pray that God will raise up somebody with more education, with more understanding, somebody like Moses said that speaks better than I do, somebody that maybe knows a little bit more than I do, somebody that has more money than I do or has more opportunity than I do, God said, what you don't understand is that I will give you favor where you are, to accomplish the things that you never thought were possible, because I've called you to this time for such a time as this. You haven't been called to the 1950s, or you would have lived in the 1950s. You weren't called to the 1970s, or He would have stopped your breath in the 1970s. You weren't called to the 1990s, or He would have cut you off in the 1990s. Do you hear? Do you understand me? You have been called for such a time as this. And even though it's scary, even though it frightens me, when I think about where we're headed, I can rest assured knowing that no matter what comes my way, the steps of the good man, of a righteous man, are ordered by God. And even though it's a trite saying, even though we say it at the most horrible times in our lives, He still says, I will work all things for your good. For your good. For your good. For your pleasing. For your goodness. To those who are My called according to My purpose. You're in the room at the right time. Don't doubt it. Don't believe it. But instead, change your frame of mind. Change your frame of thinking. Change the way you're coming at this circumstance. Change the way you're coming at your spouse. Change the way you're coming at your children. Change the way you're coming at your parents. Change the way you're coming at your job. Change the way you're coming at your money and your finances. And begin to understand that you are right where He wants you to be in order to receive what He has for you. for you. Take on that mindset. He says, take on the mind of Christ. Ooh. Father,